can begin the meeting. Burnett, do we have enough?
Yes, sir.
Now, I'll call to order the 1300th meeting of the Board of Directors of the Metro Board, and I would entertain a motion for approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Is there a second? Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. Second, I'd entertain approval of the minutes of our November 17th meeting. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. That motion carries. We'll now turn to the public comment period. We do have one individual who wishes to share with us, and that is Mr. Randy McCray, General Counsel, Central Prince George's County Community Development Corporation, and the topic is the Morgan Boulevard RFP. Mr. McCray.
Thank you so much. First things first, thank you all for allowing us to come this morning to present with you. We appreciate this opportunity to speak. We obviously are proud of the Metro Transit system and the work you do. And regardless of what occurs today, we believe that the community is better served by your presence here. So we thank you for this opportunity. My name is Randy McRae, and I serve as the general counsel for the Central Prince George's County Community Development Corporation. It seems from your framework of what we're supposed to do during public comment, I had a little time, so I'll try to take my time to share with you some of our concerns. We have been involved in the process, and at least we did respond in participation with an aspirant to the development at the Morgan Boulevard metro site in Prince George's County, Maryland. As many of you know, that's one of the metro stations that has recently opened in Prince George's County, and in determining what the development process would be, or ultimate concept would end up being, there was an opportunity to respond to a comment. Let me tell you a little about our organization. The Central Prince George's County Community Development Corporation is a blend of the several civic and community organizations in Central Prince George's County. If you're familiar with the concepts of inner beltway and outer beltway, which are typically used in Prince George's County, in Central Prince George's County, near what was the Capitol Center and is now Boulevard at the Capitol Center, is demarked by inside the beltway an organization of 30 or 40 community organizations called the Central Coalition of Community Civic Associations. And outside the Beltway is demarked, for the most part, by the Largo Civic Association, the Lake Arbor Civic Association, the Kettering Civic Association. Now, these are by no means the only community organizations involved in that area. These are some of the names that you may have heard of before. In addition to the area that we're talking around, surrounding the proposed development site, there is property that is affected by the Mildred Ridgely Gray Trust. And I speak of that affectionately because I represent the trust and its owner at this point, Ms. Gray, and a lot of the property that we're going to be developing is property that was formerly owned by the Gray family. Lastly, in the same corridor, there has been an acquisition by a faith-based organization of a mall. And that mall was purchased by the Sanctuary at Kingdom Square, of which I attend for my spiritual side, which is not important for today's conversation, but it's just something I would like to acknowledge.
Mr. Gray, we have a 2-minute comment period, and I presume what you have in writing.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah.
And I'm certain that our members, particularly from Prince George's County, would be interested in receiving that. And we appreciate your comments today. Thank you very much. Next, we will turn to report by the chairman. And this is indeed a special day, certainly for me, but I believe for the entire board and for our riders. Today, we will be acting to formally bring about the first ever Riders Advisory Council for this authority. Earlier this year, when I did assume the duties as chairman, we did work together to lay out a vision for specific goals to make Metro more open and accountable, and the board went right to work to make these goals a reality. Since February, we've made great progress in opening up the inner workings of this organization to our customers and the general public. They can see more clearly how we make decisions, and they can participate more personally in these decisions and briefly list many of the things we've done. We've added a public comment period at the start of each meeting. It's just evidence. We continue the town meeting concept begun last November by Mr. Smith and now have held one in each jurisdiction. We've improved public access to our records, including advanced availability of all materials for our board meetings. And all of our board and committee meetings are now available live via computer simulcast. All board members are now also reachable via email. Today, the appointment of the Writers Advisory Council is indeed a fitting culmination to this long list of improvements. Our customers through this should gain a clearer view of Metro's planning and decision-making process and the means to participate more fully in those processes. Our customers will now also have an official advisory role in the decisions of the board, and the effect will be to hold us much more accountable to the people we serve. For the record, let me remind everyone that this selection process for seats was open and equitable. Certainly anyone could nominate themselves, and it was an amazing outpouring of interest. Metro staff and I very much want to commend Leona and Deborah for their work. Performed a blind review of all 940 applications, and after reading that many, they may have become blind themselves. But they went through that without seeing the names in order to forward to the board a large initial grouping of the best candidates. The board then participated state-by-state basis, selecting the 21 people who are being appointed today. Their work was particularly difficult because we had so many well-qualified candidates, and only 20 of those could be named because one seat has been specifically designated for the chair of our Elderly and Disabled Transportation Committee. The people we're about to name represent a true cross-section of the entire region, both ethnically and geographically, and also by the nature of use of our system. People who travel long distance, short distances, frequently, infrequently. The appointees include one senior disabled customer, a bike on rail customer, a legally blind Metrorail rider, and one teenager. I'm delighted to say that the Riders Advisory Council reflects the many faces and travel patterns of all our riders. The appointees to the Riders Advisory Council will meet at least once a month and examine how every aspect of Metro service affects our riders. I take personal satisfaction in seeing this Riders Advisory Council materialize here today because the concept was a crucial part of my hopes for this year as board chairman. Of course, the full credit goes to many, certainly my constituents, my colleagues here on the board, the dedicated Metro staff, and especially the hundreds of people who enthusiastically submitted their applications. It was noted in a recent article, as a matter of fact, this morning, that this was tougher to get into than a Rhodes scholarship. Well, maybe a Rails scholarship is harder to get. But the Advisory Council's first gathering will be held on Wednesday, January the 18th at 6:30 here in the meeting room of the Jackson Graham Building. There'll be an opportunity for the board to meet with the council and begin discussions of roles and responsibilities. And with all of that lead up, we do have a resolution before us, and then I'll be introducing the members of the RAC who have joined us today. And I would ask for a motion of approval of the attached resolution.
So moved.
Moved and seconded. Any additional discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair definitely votes aye. And with that, it gives me great pleasure to welcome officially the first appointed members of the WMATA's Riders Advisory Council who are here to join us today, and I wish them Godspeed in their new journey. If you would please rise and be recognized by the board. Please join me in giving a round of applause.
Chairman, do we have a list of names of these?
Actually, in the resolution, you'll find all of the names.
That's like the okay. Don't have a resolution.
Sorry about that. Okay. For the District of Columbia, Katie Chang, William Justin Chittums, Dennis Jaffe, Don Pardo, Mary Williams, and Latoya Young are the six council members from the District of Columbia.
Ask if any of them are present.
Are any of them present? The members from the district?
I am on top of it.
Okay, Don. For Maryland, the Board of Directors has appointed Denise Brown, Sharon Kahn, Rodney Ellen, Susan Holland, Hitoshi Sakamoto, and I, Michael Snyder, for representing Maryland. Anyone from Maryland?
Michael Snyder.
Morning, sir.
I'm
okay. Dr. Kahn. Then from Virginia, Mary Blyther, Stephen Cerny, Pedro Erviti, Nancy
Yacomini.
Okay, Yacomini. Charles Metcalf and Lillian White. And for the at-large, in addition... No one's from Virginia.
Let's replace them all.
Virginians have raced to their suburbs in fear of the ice. We don't do ice well in Virginia. For at-large, in addition to Patrick Sheehan, who is the chair of the Elderly and Disabled Transportation Advisory Committee, we have Manel LaCourte and Kevin Moore as at-large members. Who is that who's here?
Kevin is here.
Hey, Kevin. And Kevin's also a member of MetroRiders.org. Any other questions or comments?
Gordon has a question.
Gordon?
Mr. Chairman, I think we also have a student that's on our advisory board. I think I'd like to make note of that.
Anna, would you care to give us a few more details on that?
Yes, William Justin Cheatham's. He is a student who rides our system every day. As Mrs. Mack points out to us all the time, the system is the school bus for our District of Columbia students, and he lives with his mother in Southeast. He takes the rail and the bus every day. He attends the School Without Walls. So we're very happy, and obviously he is not here today because he's in school.
Good thing.
Yes.
If he was present, I have a concern.
Yeah.
Spoken like a true dad. Any other comments? And again, I congratulate the members of the RAC. This is a very wonderful opportunity, and it should be fun. So we hope you do enjoy it. Next, we turn to a report by the General Manager and Chief Executive Officer, Mr. White.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My December board digest is in front of you. I'll kind of quickly go through the items that are there. We're pleased to announce that we've appointed our last line service director, that being for the green and yellow line, and that is Rita Davis has been selected to be our third line director, and Rita has more than 31 years of experience. And that team has now reported to work. So all three sections of the rail operation now have line management and have divided the responsibilities for purposes of accountability of the management of the rail system. And we're very, very encouraged with how well this program is working. And I think we're going to see some more benefits in the years ahead. It's especially timely this time of year in the winter season, even as we sit here today, we're experiencing yet some other wintry conditions. We have been reminding people of our snow weather plans. It does essentially mirror last year's plan, and we did make some serious and significant changes in last year's plan. The good thing is we have more capability this year than we did a year ago, because a lot of the investments that we have been making have now come to fruition. We do now have 690 of our rail cars that we have identified as weather-protected vehicles for snow and ice. That's a big increase from just a year ago. We do have de-icing units again. This will be the second year where we run 20 trains a day to keep the tracks cleared, 12 in the lineup in the mainline operation and 8 in the yards to be able to keep the trains moving. When we do hit 8 or more inches of snow, we are going to continue to proceed with restricting the underground service. That does mean some significant changes that we'll have to remind people about. The idea, of course, is to minimize the amount of recovery time associated with that. We have already been put to our snow readiness test twice this year. We have not had, of course, any accumulations of 8 inches or more. And today, with these wintry conditions, we basically will be resuming our afternoon rush hour service at 1 o'clock rather than its normal time. So we're going to do an early p.m. rush, given the expectation that there will be some early dismissals and changed patterns in terms of how people use the system. I would remind people that in these kinds of conditions where it's snow and ice, that's good for the rail system, but it's bad for the bus system. Powdery snow is bad for the rail system, a little bit better for the bus system, so it's converse. With the snow and ice, we'll probably have a little more trouble with the buses than we will with our rail cars. We did conduct our usual workshops this year to try and bring folks in through their employers to try and get better understanding of that. We're very happy that for the first time we actually got participation from representatives of the Office of Personnel Management, since their decisions affect us and ours them. And although we do have good coordination, I think this was a nice effort on their part to stay in touch with us and connected with us so we can try to share each other's plans as best we can. I also would like to thank all of you who joined us just a couple weeks ago for a very special day in recognition of Rosa Parks, which was a national transit tribute day to Rosa Parks to commemorate the 50th anniversary of her courageous act of civil disobedience that triggered the 1955 bus boycott caught in Montgomery, Alabama. We were very pleased that we were able to dedicate our 1957 bus in her name. And we are really one of the few people in the country that still is in the possession of a bus that's in the 1950s vintage, and now it's dutifully commemorated in her honor. I would also like to thank those of you who joined me and the staff yesterday for our annual employee awards ceremony. We had a very good turnout. All of the award winners are listed here in your booklet. Our two highest awards went out. The Carmen E. Turner Memorial Award went out to Clark McKenzie, who's our shift supervisor in the communication branch of the Office of Track and Structures and System Maintenance. And our Jackson Graham Memorial Award went to Harold Bartlett. And I know the employees had a fine day of recognition yesterday. And again, thanks to those of you who were able to join us. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just point out for you three administrative items that are on your agenda so you have the proper awareness of the significance and interrelationship of these. These are three items that are related to property development and real estate transactions for real estate that the authority leases in connection with our Southeast Bus Garage and that are part and parcel of actions that the District of Columbia is in the process of taking with respect to its final decision-making on a baseball stadium. Item six is a resolution that's in front of you that's a waiver of sovereign immunity in connection with the exercise of eminent domain powers by the District of Columbia. Our general counsel has provided you with a legal opinion on that, which states why we believe it is in our legal best interest to proceed in that manner. That document should be in your booklet as well to provide further justification for you in conjunction with this proposed resolution for your action. Item six relates to another resolution that's in front of you to approve the use of $500,000 from either District of Columbia TIF resources or other unallocated district funds on account here at Metro to begin design work on Navy Yard improvements to help that station be in a better position to serve a baseball stadium if indeed that final decision is made. That resolution is in front of you. There is a letter signed by the mayor in your package which formally requests this and puts the district on record with this request. The third item that's in front of you is a recommendation to negotiate and execute a lease for an alternative site. One of the parcels that we don't own but lease, which is where we store more than 80 of our buses down there, that's going to be in the footprint of the baseball stadium. So that property is in the process of being condemned. We obviously need a new location to store those buses. There is a recommended real estate transaction in here for us to accomplish that. There are two staff memos on this that explain why it is in the authority's best business interest to proceed with this. I needed to amend a previous memo that I sent to you because of final negotiations that were going on with the property owner that did slightly increase the price for our taking possession of this lease. But it is still financially advantageous to us, and likewise provides us with a longer lease term to help the authority operate its Southeast Bus Garage. So those are three items in particular, Mr. Chairman, and I wanted to make sure we pointed out to you as you do your deliberations on taking action. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Graham.
I assume that we don't want to, on these three administrative items that our general manager has mentioned, we don't want to discuss that now. We wait until we get to the administrative items themselves.
Like to do that, we'd be happy to do that, Mr. Graham.
I would prefer it that way, but okay. I just want to be clear that we're going to.
Given the fun you're going to be having on Tuesday, I'd be happy to do that for you. Okay. Mr. Deegan.
Mr. White, I appreciate very much the opportunity to attend that award ceremony yesterday. You know, it's very rewarding to see the achievements that our employees made. But in your report, I noticed you left out my favorite group of employees here. There's fine bus drivers that have driven 1 million and 2 million miles that were listed in the program yesterday. And I just wanted to make sure that we having the opportunity to mention them again, that I just find that remarkable that somebody can drive 1 million miles without an incident or accident, and then have a group that have driven 2 million miles without an incident or accident. That's speaks volumes of the type of bus driver employees that we have here at the authority.
Mr. Deegan, that omission was not by accident. It was with intent, because I knew you would want to be able to say that.
Mr. Chairman.
Can you top that? Yes, Mrs.
Deegan. Well, I admonished Mr. Deegan yesterday because he kept calling them guys. And I did note that there was one woman million miler. And it was the first woman I had seen in that group, and I was extraordinarily proud that we have now a mixed group here. So I chastised Mr. Deegan, and he promised me that he would take note in future praise of this wonderful accomplishment. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ewell.
Yes, I just want to make mention, first of all, thank staff for the opening of the additional entrance to the King Street station. However, I need to chastise you because there was originally a ribbon cutting or dedication ceremony that was scheduled for, I think, yesterday or today, whatever, that was postponed at the request of our code enforcement folks because there needed to be some other work performed. But to our surprise, the station opened without a certificate of occupancy, and that's in violation of city regulations, but we're not going to shut you down. We're going to let that be bygones, but I just warn you that that's not how we do business in the city of Alexandria. So thank you.
Okay. Mr. Zimmerman, if we could please have a report from the Planning and Development Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Planning and Development Committee met on December 1st, and as one action item to bring to you this morning. We received a briefing on short-term parking enhancements and recommended approval of a system-wide time change for revenue collection at Pan exit stations. The committee discussed a number of related issues, including a limited-use pilot program, which the committee voted to defer. But the action item itself, which I believe is attached as item, I guess it's A, it's resolution attached, included in your docket, that will provide for a change in the collection period at all Pan exit parking facilities from 9 a.m. To closing to 10:30 a.m. to closing Monday through Friday. And this is intended to alleviate the problem of people who go in, are not able to park, and then have to pay to get out, which clearly is not right and not what we intend. Again, the committee, on your motion, as I recall, Mr. Chairman, recommended approval. On behalf of the committee, I move its approval by this board.
Motion by Mr. Zimmerman. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mrs. Mack. Any discussion? I'd just like to thank staff again for their quick common sense solution. All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Mr. Zimmerman?
We also had briefings on a number of information items, specifically strategies to improve passenger flow on platforms and at stations. This is following up on the work that's been going on. We've been looking at rail cars, but this is now moving on to the platforms themselves and the station areas. And there's a number of different items being looked at, specifically new markings on the platforms and changes in escalator flow that are going to be tried at several stations, Union Station, Gallery Place, and Metro Center as a pilot. And during the months of February through April, they will be looked at, and we'll see how they work. And we'll get a report back on those in the spring to see if it, they merit extension to the rest of the system. We also got a full briefing on the space utilization master plan, something that members had asked to have looked at, and went pretty thoroughly through all the buildings and related issues, and we'll be hearing back on that. There'll be, I guess there's something, there's a budget committee item that relates to this. So that's where that's going next. But again, that was an information item, and that concluded the business of the Planning Development Committee for December.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. Next, we'll hear from Ms. Mack and report of the Budget Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Budget Committee has several recommendations to make to the board today. The first is approval of a resolution to amend the FY06 Infrastructure Renewal Program to include three projects. One is to add $10 million to the Information Technology Renewal Program for continuation of its implementation, to increase the budget for Regional Fair Integration Project by $12.5 million to implement Next Fair 4. Three is to provide $1 million to fire alarm systems, to ratify expenditures for existing work, and to provide funds for the remaining work. Staff has identified $42.5 million of available funds in the IRP from FY04 and prior years, and has requested to use $23.5 million for these three projects. Funding request of $12 million and contract action for the Carmen Eterna facility build-out was deferred by the committee. I move approval, Mr. Chairman.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Graham. Just a question of staff. Fairfax County staff noted that in the regional fair integration, a comment was made by Mr. Zimmerman about the regional fair maintenance agreement. And I believe there's a question of how that was captured in the MEED.
It will be captured when we come back with the MEED. That's the actual contracting item. We believe it to be that's the appropriate venue to deal with that, is when we come back with you for the specific contracting actions to accomplish that. We'll make sure that that's adequately addressed at that time. And in the meanwhile, we understand the importance of that with respect to the completion of the negotiation process that's going on right now.
Satisfy your concerns, Mr. Zimmerman? I think it does. this was a question. There was evidently a wording issue in terms of the regional fair maintenance agreement, making certain we recognize that as an item you'd raised at the Budget Committee.
This was the inclusion as a condition.
Correct.
That was my understanding, that it was going to be done.
The resolution, the first action that's in front of you right now is just the money action on three projects. Then there are two individual contracting actions that follow behind it. There is not a contracting action right now for the Clearinghouse Next Fair 4. When we come back early next year for that action, that's when we will deal with the issue that you brought up, Mr. Zimmerman.
As to that, yeah. My only point was when it comes, it needs to include that other part.
Absolutely.
But that's not today. That's
absolutely.
January, but I just want to
make sure we understand that.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Hearing seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. Ms. Mack.
And now I'd like to move the specific item on the ITRP, which is an additional $10 million for that project, $3 million for scope increases, $4 million for infrastructure requirements, and $3 million for implementation delays. The additional funds will increase the budget from $40.8 million to $50.8 million, and this recommendation was approved by the administration committee, and this request is simply to fund that action. I move approval.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Graham. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 No, those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion carries.
And the next is a contract action to ratify and increase funding to complete Jackson Grand Building fire alarm system regulatory requirements, and this is a ratification because the work was emergency and did move forward. And just to say that we have, when the inspection was made by the D.C. Fire Marshal, we had 30 days to implement the actions, and so we were required to move forward with it. So I request approval of the ratification.
Motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Deegan. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Ms. Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We received at our meeting the September financials. The financial highlights reflected that total year-to-date revenues exceeded budget by $8.7 million. The largest contribution to that increase was $6.1 million generated from passenger revenues. Our total year-to-date operating expenses exceeded the budget by $4.6 million. And that was due to higher than expected labor costs and pressures from power, fuel, and utility costs, which we were not unanticipating. We also reported a favorable jurisdictional subsidy of $4.1 million on a year-to-date basis. And it was also important to note that cost recovery for the rail was 81%, which was 4% higher than the projection, and the cost recovery for bus was 36%, which was 2 points higher than the projection. So in terms of cost recovery, we are really making excellent progress. We received a status report on performance-based budgeting. Discussion really grew out of many of the recommendations from the JCC at the budget at the time of the approval of the fiscal year 06 budget. And based on the recommendations from the JCC and some approval by the board and the agreement on the management side that many of these issues need to be worked on and could go forward, we have asked for a scope of work for this project. It will include the development of performance measures, and it will also include the development of a business plan, a process improvement plan, and we expect that the performance measures will be presented in time to be incorporated in the 2008 budget. However, we recommended that if, to some extent, we recognize that we can implement some of our recommendations as a part of our FY07 budget, we want to do that. Also, we will be receiving quarterly status reports on the development of this plan, and we'll be getting input and guidance not only from the board but from our jurisdictional staff and also from our CAOs or our CEOs, whichever is appropriate. So it is intended that this is going to be a comprehensive review with input from as many of our stakeholders as we can get involved in the process. Also at our meeting, we received the general manager's proposed FY07 operating and capital budgets. The total operating budget for fiscal 07 is estimated at $1.088 billion, in expenses, revenue of $627 million, and a subsidy of $461 million. The capital budget totals $662 million for fiscal year 07. The 07 budget was structured in a way that expenses did meet the board guidance, which showed increases of $74 million, expenses by $74 million, revenue by $48 million, and $26 million subsidies. However, we were presented with some expense items that were outside of the guidance that was given to the general manager, and during the budget review process, we will be looking at those things that are inside and outside of the guidance to see how we want to structure the final budget for 07. The focus for this year is bus service improvements, and the budget includes $23.6 million for bus and rail service improvements. I would also like to say that we agreed and recommend for the first time a public budget hearing. We anticipate that that would be held in the spring of 2006. That completes my report.
Thank you, Ms. Mack, and I'm sure that our new Riders Advisory Council should be getting a briefing on the budget and have the opportunity to let us know what they think of that budget. Next, we have the report of the Administration Committee. Mr. Deegan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Administration Committee met on Thursday, December 8, 2005, and the following action items were referred to the board by the committee. First is one I'm very proud of, the approval of an additional provision to WMATA's Personnel Policies and Procedures Manuals, Section 6.5, regarding employees called up for military duty. Staff presented a recommendation for approval that an additional provision to Section 6.5 of the WMATA's Personnel Policies and Procedures Manual, permitting a pay supplement to those non-represented employees called for military duty effective January 1, 2006. This provision would provide a pay supplement to those non-represented employees who are called up for military duty. This pay supplement would equal to the difference between their military-based pay plus allowances and their WMATA salary. There is currently no provision for payment of this kind of benefit in either WMATA policies or union contracts. The District of Columbia, Commonwealth of Virginia, and the State of Maryland all provide for a pay supplement to employees called up for military duty. This benefit will also be offered to represented employees through their union representation. I move approval.
Seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. Mr. Deegan.
One other item for approval of the amendment to WMATA's Local 2 retirement plan. The staff presented a recommendation that Section 12.05 of the WMATA Local 2 retirement plan be restated to ensure that the plan's continued compliance with the Economic Growth and Tax Relief Reconciliation Act of 2001 by making lump sum payments of small benefits a participant election. On November 10, 2005, Local 2 agreed to modify Section 12.5 in the WMATA Local 2 retirement plan, making it a participant election. I move approval.
There a second? Second by Ms. Mack. Any discussion on this item? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. Mr. Deegan.
One other little information item, and since the Budget Committee takes up such an inordinate amount of time here, they weren't able to get the report for the annual disadvantaged business enterprise report, and that'll be at a future administrative committee meeting. And I would like to take the opportunity to thank Kathy Hudgens for chairing that committee meeting since I was unable to attend, and thank Mr. White particularly and the board and the staff here for the expressions of sympathy that I received that day. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deegan, for acknowledging that. Finally, for reports, turn to Mr. Smith for a report by the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee met today, December 15, 2005, and is recommending one action item for board consideration regarding the car deployment and improving the throughput of trains on the Orange Line. The purpose of this is to seek the board's approval of establishing a six-month demonstration program to operate the Orange Line with a minor adjustment in the number of trains to try out using eight-car trains on that line. This program will reduce the overall number of peak hour trains on the Orange Line while maintaining the same number of rail cars and throughput capacity. The goal of this demonstration program is to improve reliability of the trains along the Orange Line. On behalf of the committee, I move approval.
Moved. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Zimmerman. Any
question?
Mr. Zimmerman.
Just to clarify, this would begin in January?
Yes, there's not a specific date picked yet, but we want to launch it sometime in January, probably mid to late January. There are a number of communication issues that obviously came up at the committee discussion that we want to make sure are attended to.
Sometime in January, and we'll be, you know, there'll obviously be notification for us and everybody else when. And then it's planned as a six-month trial, but as Mr. Tangerlini, I think, indicated in the committee meeting, I presume we can get information before that sure. We'll be learning something after even a month, and there'll be some kind of report on how it's going and what we're finding. I'm particularly interested in seeing what our actual performance is in terms of trains per hour going through and that kind of thing, schedule reliability, all the things you're going to be measuring. So we'll be able to learn something about that prior to the end of that period.
Yeah, I think we should try to give you a 30-day snapshot to see how things are going in the first 30 days.
I do, want to emphasize again, Mr. Chairman, I think it looks like this is really a good idea to try. But in any case, there's the opportunity for some misunderstanding about it, particularly with the description. And when we had earlier in the year heard, a possibility of running, I think it actually came from the peer review panel from APTA, running fewer trains but making them longer. I certainly was one of those who had reservations, and I still do in general have reservations to that approach if we're talking about less frequent, significantly less frequent arrival of trains and the potential for people to be waiting longer and also for people to be, for larger numbers of people to be on the platforms. In some cases, that might not be a good idea. In this particular case, whatever, general reservations I have, this doesn't seem to be the situation at all, and I think it's important that people understand that this is only actually a reduction of two trains out of, however, there's 32 dispatched in the morning, so it's two out of 32, and it's only in the morning, it's only for that one peak hour, but moreover, it is believed that the effect will not actually be fewer trains in the peak hour, but the exact same number, because currently we have something that isn't viable. They can't really squeeze them through, which is, what we've been told for a while, so the result may very well be that people see exactly the same number of trains go through in the peak hour as they do now. But those trains will have, in effect, more cars. So if the staff is right, we would actually have more capacity in that time than we're effectively getting through in the peak hour now. So, I just don't want people to, read this and think all of a sudden they're going to be waiting longer. It only affects the peak hour, and the amount of time, the additional waiting time we're talking about, is less than a minute. It may be as little as, I think I saw 20 or 30 seconds when you work it out. So I'm hopeful. I think if this winds up with less stop and go on both the orange and blue lines, then that'll be a great improvement for riders, and we'll have learned something about the operation of the system as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. Mr. Gordon?
I was just going to elaborate on Mr. Zimmerman's last point, that even though this operates on the orange line, he made his point in committee that there should be some benefit to those on the blue line as well, and I think that was important to note in the board meeting as well.
Any other comments or questions? Hearing seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. Mr. Smith.
Yes, in so much as the meeting was this very morning, I'll just note for the record that other information items discussed at the committee meeting were the reengineering call handling and complaint processing system. We received a rail performance update, and also a review on the status and tracking system for implementing the APTA peer review recommendations on a quarterly basis. That concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Turning to the administrative actions, Mr. Zimmerman.
Motion.
I was going to entertain a motion for the non-baseball items, which would be 1, 2, 3, 4, and 8.
I move those items be approved en bloc, Mr. Chairman.
There's a second.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Now we have before us items 5, 6, and 7.
Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Graham.
I will move 5, 6, and 7 in block, but I would like to make a comment.
Okay, we have a motion for 5, 6, and 7 in block by Mr. Graham.
I'll second the motion.
There is a second by Ms. Mack. And back to Mr. Graham.
I just want to, and I don't know exactly how to do this because I don't want to put up too much of a red flag, but I would, the council will be voting on this next Tuesday, and I don't have a functioning crystal ball as to the outcome, but in the event that the current stadium financing proposal is, the current stadium lease proposal is rejected, this would obviously have a fundamental impact on much of this action. And so I just want to have some kind of assurance that we not act until after the vote next Tuesday. And I don't know precisely how to do that, but I think it's just prudent to just stay our hand until we see what happens. And if there's an issue with that, if there's some kind of timing question, you know, I would certainly want to be apprised of that type of issue. But otherwise, I would like us to have these items pass with that understanding.
White, does that pose a challenge?
No, I don't think it poses a challenge. We don't want to do it if we don't have to. I think the most important thing the staff wants to do is at least have a lease, even if we don't have a start date on an alternative location. But we will not bring that to closure, certainly before the council action. So staff will certainly be paying attention to and monitoring what happens next week with the council.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr.
In terms of the lease for the Pepco site, I mean, we could always, of course, sign it contingent upon as another idea. Whatever way you do it, I wouldn't want to jeopardize any of this proposal because it's a good proposal. But if we don't need to use it, then obviously we don't want to get ourselves into moving our parking lot if we don't need to. Is that understood, Mr. Chairman?
I made by staff.
It's understood.
And the second question I have, in terms of, I recognize that Pepco has kind of bumped the price up a little bit. I guess they got wind that we were interested, really, and that we were saving money, and they've increased the cost to us. But what about the transportation of the drivers to and from the lot? Is that factored into this?
Yes, we have agreed that issue. If there is a better and cheaper way to address that issue, working together with the district, we will attempt to accomplish that. That includes even the possibility of another lease, were it to be possible to do, actually within walking distance of the existing lease, that it would actually be cheaper than the amount that has been forecasted that would be necessary to run a shuttle. So there, if that indeed were to materialize, then there would be a subsequent recommendation that the staff would make inside of the context of the financial envelope that we have identified for the district, and the district has indicated that they would provide financial assistance for.
So, but the transportation issue is not before us in this action.
No, it's not.
Okay. Well, I think with that, I sincerely hope that we won't have to do this. But in the event that the council determines that the lease is to be approved, at least we'll have stayed our hand until we see that outcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Graham. Ms. Mack?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say that I'm pleased that these actions are before us, and they do represent cooperation between Metro and the city, and It is the kind of working together that we'd like to see, and throughout the pursuit of this project, if indeed it does go forward, and we assume it will, there will be lots of other instances where the kind of cooperation that we see here will be called for. I think in the end, the partnership will accrue to the benefit of both the city and to WMATA. So just want to make those comments. The mayor did request this action, and I'm pleased that we were able to respond.
Mr. Linton, followed by Mr. Tangerlini.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I too applaud the cooperation with the city and Metro on these matters. I would like to draw our attention to the fact that the $500,000 of TIF money is, in fact, or money that will substitute that is money coming from the district's portions of dollars that are available in the Metro budget. But I also would like to draw attention to the fact that this is for design work, and that this board is making no commitment for any funds for building. I just want to make sure that we go on record and clearly and state that, Mr. Chairman.
Tangerlini.
Mr. Chairman, I almost wish I wasn't coming after Gordon, actually, having him just said that. So I'll keep moving back to what I was going to say before and just respond to Mr. Graham. I feel I have to. I sincerely hope we do have to take this action because there is a stadium that will be built there. That having been said, I think we need to continue to explore the fact that we may need to lease this land anyway, because our lease is going to expire at our current bus parking facility, and this may be an answer that we may need to have as an authority just in general to extend the life of the Southeastern Bus Garage, knowing that we do not own the land on which we park those buses. So I think this isn't the last time we're going to have this conversation. I hope by moving this forward we can continue to protect the authority, protect our interests, protect our service, while accommodating the district's economic revitalization of this area. And I appreciate all the efforts on the part of the board and the staff to help us with that.
Anyone else? All those in favor of items 5, 6.
Wait, I had one other point. I'm sorry.
Okay, one more swing at the ball.
$1 billion. But we don't want to get into that, do we? Mr. Tangler. It's the $500,000 is not to exceed. Am I right?
Not to exceed. Well, the mayor's request is that $500,000 is the figure that he has cited in his request.
I'd like to ask that this read not to exceed, because hopefully the design work is possible for less than that, since we're just guessing as to what the design work will cost anyway. I don't think we have to commit a full $500,000, since we have no scientific statement suggesting that it is $500,000.
Mr. Graham, we understand is not to exceed $500,000. That's all we have. That's all we're going to design.
So then there's no objection, Mr. Chairman, to the insertion of the words not to exceed.
Thank you. Second
well,
motion.
I did. And let's talk about that a little bit, because I guess the design work is going to cost what it costs. I mean, what do we think it's going to cost? And I would hate for us to delay this by putting a not to exceed and then at some later time have to come back and take off the not to exceed, because that's what it costs. So could you clarify that a little bit
more?
I'll
look at a little bit more, Mrs. Mike, but based on what the district told us is the selected alternative, $500,000, he will do that design for that alternative. If something changes tomorrow, if the project becomes bigger or less, the number will change. But based on what we know today, $500,000, he will do it.
Okay.
But you, Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Graham.
I mean, we're always looking for ways in which we don't have to spend every last penny. And, you know, just simply, you know, stating that you may spend up to $500,000, and let's hope the design work can be done for less. You know, I mean, you don't have to go out and award a $500,000 contract. You can negotiate a contract. But in any event, Mrs. Mack, there will be $500,000 available.
That's acceptable.
Thank you.
All those in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion carries. That concludes our administrative actions. Next, we turn to reports. NVTC, Ms. Hudges.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I noted last week that the Northern Virginia, last meeting, the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission would have before it the issue of the dedicated funding in preparation for the 2006 legislative session of Virginia. And I'm pleased to note that Northern Virginia Transportation Commission endorsed a legislation that would call for a dedicated funding source for WMATA. They were very specific in terms of looking at a sales tax. Additionally, the Transportation Authority and the Regional Commission also endorsed dedicated funding, and our local jurisdiction, Fairfax, and I assume other local jurisdictions have done so, moving into the 2006 general session. So I think it's a very promising opportunity.
NVTA?
I did say NVTA. Northern Virginia Transportation Authority and the Regional Commission. So with those regional bodies and the local jurisdictions we have before, hopefully before the General Assembly in another month, the discussion of Virginia identifying that source for covering the WMATA commitment that we needed for those five jurisdictions.
Remember anything you care to add to that?
Good summary.
Mr. Lynn?
I applaud the action of those in the state of Virginia and those locally in Northern Virginia as well. I think we're taking the lead. I'm excited about your leadership.
Well, we still have to get it through General Assembly.
Right. But you have to start.
That's right, and we at least do have a Northern Virginia position that is united and consistent across our jurisdictions.
Exactly. Thank you.
Next, we have D.C. report. Ms. Mack.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to take this opportunity to recognize Mr. Douglas Stallworth, who is resigning as an employee of the D.C. government tomorrow. Douglas has, can we give him a round of applause? Douglas has been an employee of the district for more than 30 years and has been a staffer to WMATA board members for at least during my 20-year tenure. He's kind of known as the D.C. bus man, and he also led a very important activity in the district to have a student fare card that is used by all of our students as we ride our Metro school bus. And Mrs. Stallworth was actually nominated to receive an Outstanding District Employee Award because of that student fare card and the benefit that it provides to our student riders and to the families who have to pay the bills. So I congratulate Douglas on his fine tenure at the D.C. government and for whatever endeavor you pursue afterwards. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, as Mr. Stallworth, I have the good fortune of having Mr. Stallworth on the staff at the D.C. Department of Transportation. I, too, want to echo Mrs. Mack's comments about his tremendous dedication to his work, his tremendous knowledge of this area of endeavor, and all the efforts he's made. He will very much be missed, but he's also, in the sense, an excellent employee because he's shared an awful lot of what he knows with our existing staff and with our new staff. And so, in many ways, his legacy will be how well we perform in the future. And I know, based on how well Doug has done in his 30 years of service, that we will continue to do as well as we can. So I want to thank Doug personally from this side of the table for all his hard work. And we know his home phone number and expect to be calling it continuously as long as we need to.
Let's see, the meeting before last, we lost a Maryland staffer. This time we lost D.C. All the Virginia folk are still here.
Good.
Next, WSTC, Mr. Deegan.
No report.
Okay, with that, we'll have a motion for executive session. I move the board meet in executive session to discuss personnel matters consistent with board procedure, Roman numeral 6.3. Is there a second? All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, chair votes aye. This meeting is adjourned. Amen.